Now let's get started on our next panel on self-publishing. Your host is Kate Sutherland from, she's our Fremantle Press children's publisher. Kate worked at UWA Publishing and coordinated the Perth Writers Festival before joining Fremantle Press some 25 years ago. Please welcome her. And I'll hand it over.
Now, this panel is all about self-publishing, and we have three serious experts here. On the far end, we've got Annabel Smith. Annabel is an author, editor, and all-round writing business guru. Her first novel, Whiskey Charlie Foxtrot, was published by Fremantle Press in 2012. Her second novel, A New Map of the Universe, was published by UWA Publishing. And her third work, The Ark, which is a digital interactive novel, was self-published. In the middle, we've got Debbie Lee. Debbie Lee is a Senior Manager of Content Acquisition and Business Development at Ingram Spark. As well as print-on-demand service for small publishers, Ingram also offer advice on marketing and distribution, whether you're publishing one book or 100. So she is the go-to woman on the printing front. And next to me is Wendy Binks. Wendy is a Fremantle-based artist and author with her own company, Stunned Emu Designs. Wendy's first book, Where's Stripey, is a best-selling self-published children's picture book that won two awards, including the prestigious West Australian Premier's Book Awards. Wendy is also the creator of two other self-published books, Scrambled Egg and Invisible Me, as well as the illustrator of 10 Clumsy Emus and Hush Little Possum, both published by Scholastic Books. So you can see there's a wealth of experience here, and we'll get stuck into it now. So if you're an author and you've written a book, you've got your work in its raw form, whether it's for kids or adults, fiction or non-fiction, what are you going to do with it now? Annabel, let's begin with you. You've worked with traditional publishers as well as self-published. Why did you choose to self-publish The Ark, and what are some of the things you wish you'd known before you began that process?
The Ark is an experimental interactive novel and app. And when I started writing it, I started looking around for publishers and to see who was doing interesting things with enhanced ebooks. And I found really no one was doing interesting things with enhanced ebooks, even though there was a lot of hype in the media about enhanced ebooks and how they were the future of publishing. Most publishers were investing all their resources into perhaps one really big product where Stephen Fry would read chapters and things like that, but it wasn't something they were really investing in a general sense, and certainly not the kind of publishers who I thought would be interested in The Ark. So I thought that I would have a go at self-publishing. What I wish I knew, what I wish I'd known when I went down that road was that actually the self-publishing platforms that were available at the time couldn't accommodate the content that I created. I created a novel that had a lot of graphic elements, although it was not a graphic novel. It was a very designed novel. It's a novel in digital documents. So there are text messages, memos, emails, blog posts, and each of them had a very different look to them so that at a glance the reader could tell what kind of text they were reading. Because I find it very clunky when so you're reading an email and at the top of the page it has to say email. And I think I wanted someone to look at it and know it was an email. So I invested a lot of resources and time and money in having these designs done. And then when I went to upload it to Amazon, I discovered that when you upload something to Amazon, it goes through this machine, which is called a meat grinder. That's as good as it sounds. It takes your words and it strips away all the formatting so that it can be read on a Kindle of any, you know, era, and people can adjust the font to the size they prefer. So to have a novel on Amazon with graphic elements, I either had to put it as a picture book. Well, this was an apocalyptic story, so I thought probably not. There's cannibalism and stuff in it. So, or it could be a graphic novel in the graphic novel category, but it's not a graphic novel. It doesn't have any illustrations at all. I could just imagine all the one-star reviews I was going to get from the angry graphic novel fans out there. So I had to choose between publishing it on Amazon and really giving up what I had invested so much in, or not publishing it on Amazon, releasing it as a PDF, and losing that discoverability that comes with listing your book on Amazon. So it was a choice between a commercial and a creative outcome, and I chose the creative. Maybe I'm an idiot. It did not sell well at all. The discoverability was a massive issue, but I'm really proud of the product, and in some ways I'm really happy that I put it out the way I wanted it to be. But I would say if you're thinking of doing anything even slightly out of the ordinary, just find out first if you actually can before you invest heavily in it.
Well, Debbie, that segues very nicely to you. I think things have moved quite quickly in that sphere in terms of presentation and what's possible and what's not possible. Debbie, what would you say about books that are best suited to different formats?
Well, with Ingram Spark, we're a print-on-demand platform, and we also do distribute e-books, so you can choose to do an e-book or a print book, but we don't have any real platform for that interactivity that Annabelle's been talking about. We recommend that you sort of stick to the straight and narrow pretty much in terms of the type of style of book that you're going to want to do, because it does have limitations. We're not a mainstream, we're not a publisher, we're a print and global distribution organisation. So we have amazing power in terms of access to market, making your book available. But as Annabelle just said, if the book can't be uploaded to a retail platform, then it's not going to get that discoverability. We make the books available, but not if it's got all that interactive sort of stuff. So, you know, anything that's just hard copy or ebook, generally reflowable text. We do distribute fixed format ebooks, but only two platforms accept it. That's Apple and Kobo. And that's if you've got a children's picture book or a recipe book that does have illustration and text that needs to be on the same page that you designed it to be on.
Okay, so these are important things to consider before you get started. Wendy, you've self-published and you've worked with traditional publishers. How do those experiences compare for you?
Well, they're very similar in the fact that you're creating the book and you're still thinking about how it's going to be, you know, accepted and sold. But when you're self-publishing, you're wearing many, many hats. You're the creator, you're the publicist, you're the wholesaler, the retailer, the bookseller, the salesperson. You know, you've got all these different hats on, and public speaker, if that's what you're doing. And so you have to think of the whole thing along. You have to learn words like discoverability and longevity, and you have to know about wholesale and retail and profit margins and all those sorts of things. So it's it can be very lonely. It's very risky, and it's a massive amount of work. But if you do it well, the rewards will be way more than if you do it through a traditional publisher. I'm very unique because I sell all over Australia as well, so I sell the books that are also published by Scholastic, and so I've actually, so I buy them from them and sell them, and I've actually made more money by doing that than the royalties. So, but when you go through a publisher, you give up, you don't have so much responsibility, but you don't have so much control, so it's two ways. And sometimes people, that's all they want to do is create. They don't want to know all that boring stuff. And so it's good for some people and not others. So it was a very different experience. The main reason I did go, because a lot of people would say, you're so successful self-publishing, why would you go through a publisher? Is because there's very little kudos in self-publishing. And there's two reasons. One is that there's a lot of self-published books out there that haven't been made very well. They were in such a rush to get it out there that they didn't get enough help. And also, a lot of people think that you've got your book and you're desperate to get it published, you've taken it to all these traditional publishers and they've all just said, thanks, but no thanks. And so you went, right, I'm just going to do it myself. And that's what people assume. So there's not a lot of kudos there. So I thought, my very first book was Scholastic, so I'm going to do that. So now I'm a real published author, illustrator. And it has actually helped, I hate to say it. It has made you be, you know, just a bit more credible for that reason.
It's interesting. So being a self-publisher, you do tend to have total control over the project, but you do, as Wendy says, have total responsibility for every aspect of the process. And you can outsource some of that, but you've got to find who the right people to outsource those kind of things are too. So a traditional publisher like Fremantle Press provides a full editorial service from the structural edit right through to the final proofread. If you're self-publishing, you have to sort all of that out yourself, that all of that falls on you. So tell me, starting with you, Annabelle, how do you find good editors and proofreaders? What did you look for?
I asked people that I already knew, actually. So I asked the editor who I had worked with on a previous book, on my first novel. I asked her who she would recommend. So if you know an editor and they can't do it for you, they'll know another editor who they can recommend. But there's also the Australian Society of Editors. And when people ask me, I always recommend that you go through that. Because some people will say to you, oh, I can edit your book because I do the school newsletter. I edit the school newsletter. And there's a big difference between the kind of, you know, high-level editing that people train for 4 years to do and proofreading, which is what editing a school newsletter is more about. So it's great to have people who can help you get your book in shape in that way, but you do need somebody who's been trained. So I definitely recommend going through the Society of Editors and asking other people you know who have had work edited. Who did you work with? What kind of way do they work? And it's really important to ask the editor how they work. For example, do they work on paper? Will you print things out and they'll make notes on it? Or will they do it using track changes? You might have preferences in that area and they might say, I don't work like that, or vice versa. And if you have an idea about what kind of things you want help with, that can be helpful. So go in prepared with a list of questions and have a good chat with them, because you need to know if you can work with them, if you're going to be able to deal with getting feedback from that person. Because getting feedback on your book can be quite painful, and you sort of, your gut reaction is you want to cry and you sort of hate the person and you want to reject them. So it's great if you like them a lot to start with, because you'll definitely like them less for a short while. By the end, you'll love them because they will make your book so much better. But, yeah, there's definitely highs and lows. You have a kind of lover's tiff in the middle, I think.
Well, hopefully you get over it. Wendy, Annabelle works with long-form text, but you're very much more about illustrated children's picture books. Do you engage with anyone in editing your illustrations?
Not so much the actual. No, there is. It's just how it interacts with the words. So my first book, I flew by the seat of my pants. I went to my graphic designer and I had all the illustrations in a folder and I had all the words and I said, just put them together and make a book. And he went, ah! And luckily it worked, but more good luck than good management, I think. And then he said to me, Wendy, promise me when you do your next book that you come to me with the storyboard and don't do any proper illustrations and we'll work it out together. And he was fantastic. He was able to do that, but not, I mean, he's a graphic designer. I had an editor edit my first book. She couldn't do anything with the pictures. She just did the words. Obviously, the pictures are telling the story as well, so you don't want the words and pictures to be competing with each other or repeating themselves. So that not all editors are equal. So you have to find one that can do both things well. And so I've actually got lots of different sources. I had one editor for my third book. She was great. I also, I'm part of Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, which is a fantastic peer group. And there's an awful amount of skill and experience and talent in that. And so I just pick from that, because it's like there is a lot of help out there now, and it's just finding it. But all editors are not equal. You have to find someone who can do what you're actually after.
That's great advice for everyone out there. Going from the graphic designer, a traditional publisher, again, would look after all of the book production stage. So the design of the cover and the internals and the typesetting and the layout, all of that, taking it from your Word document, usually, to print-ready files. As a self-publisher, that's all on you, again. Debbie, how does Ingram Spark work with authors to get things to the print-ready stage?
We recommend authors refer to
a list of author service providers that we can provide. We call them author service providers. They're book publishing professionals. They've usually had some in-house experience. They might be editors, they might be designers, and they tend to have their own network of production specialists that they can then work with. And the onus is on the author to find the author service provider that they think they would work with best. And those author service providers will then take direction from the author. So the author is actually their own publisher. But as an author, you're not expected to do the editing and the design and the cover art, because your work is doing the writing. And employing, you're acting as a publisher, you're employing editors, designers, cover artists that you decide you want to work with, and you can also nominate your budget and you can negotiate where you want to spend the most money. It might be that if it's a children's picture book and you don't want any of the words changed because you have finessed it, you're just focusing on the design or the layout. They might be able to appoint an illustrator, because not all children's authors are actually illustrators, as Wendy is. But we do say work with the professionals. We don't do that with you. We're not a publisher. But we can provide a list, but there's a huge number of production specialists out there that you can refer to and pick and choose, and, you know, choose wisely.
Annabelle, did you do all of your own, you were talking before about, you know, creating email formats and stuff within your text. Did you do all that yourself, or did you employ someone?
Oh, gosh, no. I'm useless with that stuff. I worked with some graphic design students. They did a unit at Edith Cowan where they used my book as a project for the semester, and then there were three students whose work I really liked, so then I paid them to continue working with them. So most of the designs for within the book came through that. So that was cheaper than paying a professional, but it cost me a lot in time, and professionalism was really lacking, so it was required a lot more management. There's pros and cons. If you've got a lot of time and not much money, it can be great to work with very early career or students, but in hindsight I think it would have been just easier to hire professionals for that part. I got an artist to do the cover. I looked on the Australian Society author website to see what the going rate was, and that cost $1,000, so it was very expensive, but it was really wonderful piece of art. In terms of the layout, because I was making a print copy as well, I asked the printer if they could recommend someone for me to work with, and they recommended a guy who did a lot of work for them, and he was absolutely fantastic. He really knew his stuff, which was great because I didn't know any stuff. And he asked me all sorts of questions. I didn't even understand the questions. And he was nice enough to explain things to me. So, yeah, it was really helpful to have someone very experienced, because my book wasn't very straightforward in a lot of ways.
And Wendy, you had a pre-existing relationship with the graphic designer because of the other side of your business?
No.
Or not?
No, different. He was purely for my books, and I was very lucky to find him. He was a friend of a friend of a friend, and he also used to work for Fremantle Press. So he knew all about children's books, and not all graphic designers do, so he knew all about those, you know, things like gutters and, you know, spacing and all that, so he just knew it all. And otherwise, I had to learn it and tell graphic designers, so I was very, very lucky with that, and so he could do all that process. And he also put me onto the printer as well, so I was very, very lucky to find him, because, once again, they're not equal. And he did everything. He did the whole book design, got all print ready, and he just sent it off to the printer, who he also had a relationship with. So it was very easy for me.
A simpler journey than it might have otherwise been. Were there any, apart from him telling you, please give me a storyboard next time, are there any other pitfalls that you would tell people about that they should try and avoid if they're going down the self-published route in terms of production?
The main thing, I've got this big belief in working backwards. So before you start doing anything, go from that end and work out where you're going to sell it and go backwards. And that will also change, that can alter the size of your book, the shape of it, how you get it bound, whether it's stapled or glued, thickness of pages, hardcover, softcover, all those things can actually be affected by where you're going to sell it, how you're going to sell it, who your market is. So I'm a big believer in working backwards. And a lot of people come to me for help and they already have the book there and then say, how can I sell it? And I just go, oh, you probably should have asked me before you did the book. So yeah, I'm a big believer in working backwards.
Okay. So as a self-publisher, you've written your book, you've edited your book, you've designed your book, and now you need to print your book. This is your field of expertise, Debbie. What would you say to authors before they get too far down the track, things that they should really be looking at when they're getting to the print stage?
Okay, and I think Wendy's made a really good point. You've got to start planning before you've even really written the manuscript or during the manuscript process. And one of the great things about Ingram Spark, I don't want to sound too commercial about it, but even if you don't end up using Ingram Spark as your print platform, they've got an online generic print and ship calculator, and it allows you to sort of have a look at the different formats that are available and how much it's going to cost for printing one unit or as many units as you want. But you can have a look at that and see what the different trim sizes are, what the different stock types are. There's cream or there's white. There's three different types of colour in terms of the quality. You might not be able to afford the premium quality, but you might not need to. If you've just got a little splash of colour here and there, you might just, you know, go with the more economical option. There's hardback, there's paperback. So you really have to think about, you know, if I do a large format book, what's that going to cost me versus what a smaller format's going to be or what else? And also compare to what else is out there. So during your writing process, do the research and have a look in bookshops and online and see what else is out there in the genre that you're writing in and what, you know, what their layout and design looks like, because you don't want to look too different, because that's how the market sort of identifies that type of book. So you want to sort of be consistent, but you also want to have a point of difference, but that might be in terms of the cover design. Just some tips, but I would say use the print and shipping calculator because it's online, it's generic. And then as the book evolves, you might have put in, there's print variables that you put in, like, you know, the type of cover, whether it's hardback or paperback, the trim size, but the page extent, that's the variable that you might not know, but you'll have a ballpark. So if it's a novel, you want to be sort of maybe 60,000 word to 80,000 words ballpark. That might be 200 pages, 220 pages. You don't want the book to start getting to 400 pages, especially in your first book, because people don't have the attention span these days, I hate to say, until you've got a name for yourself. But you can change it. So that's not... And then when you've actually got your book ready to upload, you'll know what you're paying for the units costing. And if you want to change it a little bit, you can play it up a bit. That's my advice.
Right. Now, Wendy and Annabelle, how did you decide how many to print? Because this is one of the perennial questions.
Because mine was primarily designed to be read as an ebook because I wanted the interactivity, I just did a very small print run for the launch, so I only printed 250. In hindsight, I actually wish I had printed more, but they were very expensive and I didn't know where to put them. And I had heard horror stories of people printing 1,000 copies of their book and then it fills up their shed for the next 10 years, so I was quite wary of that.
And Wendy, Where Stripey was a real runaway success. How did you decide your print runs?
Because I'd already done lots of printing on cards and things, sizes didn't scare me. My graphic designer said, 5,000, are you mad? But I ended up selling them in 2.5 months because I'd done a lot of marketing beforehand and I really pushed it before it came out. So then I got 20,000 printed. But I wouldn't do that now because I've got nowhere to store them. But I'm once again a big believer I'm working backwards. So I look at how much you're going to spend, how much the book is going to cost in the bookshop. So you do it, like, to see what other people are charging. And then booksellers are going to take 40% discount. Agents or distributors might take 65-70% discount. So that's brought it down here. Up this way, you've got the other costs and the printing. And then that bit in the middle is your profit. And so I kind of think, well, it can't cost me more than that to be printed. But what I really recommend that everyone does, if you think you're going to get 500 books printed, don't ask for a quote of getting 500 books printed, if you find a printer, ask for a quote for 300, 500, 1,000, 3,000, 10,000, 20,000. It doesn't cost anything. That doesn't take them long, but they have sweet spots in, like, just different number of books will cost them less, and so you have to find your sweet spot. So you have to find the point where you can get enough books printed so the cost is down, but you're not actually extending yourself, especially when it's your first print run. I actually have a list here. This is very, very old. This to give you an example. This is a very old number, so don't take these for gospels. This is a 32-page picture book. 100 books, $24 per book. 200 books, $12 per book. 500 books, $5.50 per book. 1,000, $3.20. 15,000, $1.33 per book. 20,000, $1.28 per book. So between 15 and 20,000, there's only 5 cents difference. So you wouldn't do it. Not for that extra $5,500 and all the extra boxes you've got to put somewhere. But between 500 and 1,000, there's $2 difference. So that's $2 of your profit in your pocket. So that's why it's good to get lots of different quotes so that you can actually find out where your sweet spot is.
So the finances are really important for a self-publisher, because a traditional publisher takes on board all the financial responsibility for a book. The author has no direct outlay. Were there any surprises for you, Annabelle, or you, Wendy?
Everything was a surprise. My learning curve was like, whoop! I was really, really blessed with the ARC because I got an amazing fellowship from the Australia Council for the Arts, $60,000. And it cost me every cent of that to do my book, because I was paying a web developer and I paid a publicist and I had to, as it turned out, get the largest format, the size they call Royale or trade paperback. I needed the thickest stock because I had all the graphic elements on the page and I didn't want bleed through the page. So then the books were really heavy, so the postage was incredibly expensive. So there was one horrifying surprise after another, really, for me. So it's a cautionary tale. Yeah, definitely work backwards, work from the end is such great advice. I didn't know anything. I was so green and I was just sort of on this adventure. And there were a lot of scary moments.
Did you have any scary moments, Wendy?
Only when my graphic designer went, 5,000, are you mad? And I went, I actually thought, well, I can just cut the pictures out and frame them and sell them in my shop if they don't work, if I've got left over. But because I've done a lot of printing, I'm very lucky. I had my own shop, had done a lot of printing on cards and things. All that side of it wasn't new to me. And so this was just another product in my shop, really. And so a lot of that stuff I had planned for a long time before, and I knew. I mean, there was extra costs like photographing my original artworks. It has to be very high resolution. And maybe you have to pay for storing your books, which, I mean, I had a big house, but you might have to do that. That's extra costs. And the postage is a very good thing. I had, like, my books were like 2 grams over from $2, $2 to $5, you know, and that's a big difference when someone's ordering books. So, I mean, you might not be able to make much difference to that, but you might. So it's a good thing to kind of work that out. I mean, I don't know how you weigh it all beforehand, but there's certain things like that might cost you more. But to me, the biggest cost is the time involved. It's a huge amount of time, and it's like, when do you find that time? Set it aside. It's difficult.
Debbie, things like the weight of each individual book, that's something your printer would be able to tell you, isn't it?
Yes, so when you upload your PDF file as your final book, you will actually be able to see how many books in a box and what the weight of the book is. But there's also it's already calculated, the print and ship calculator tells you what your shipping cost is going to be to send your book to a particular destination. So, and just to sort of comment on Wendy's costings, if you're doing a black and white novel, it might cost you $5 or $6 to print one book, which is pretty good because you haven't lost lots of money printing 1,000, getting a smaller unit cost, but then going, what am I going to do with all these books? I can't sell them all. Or finding a typo and going, oh God, I really, you know, can't sell these books because there's a typo in it. The beauty of print on demand is that you print one book or you print a few hundred or however many you need, but you can always upload a revision file and get rid of that typo. So, you know, no matter how many times, I've gone off track, but no matter how many times you've read that book before it's printed, there'll be something that you might want to change afterwards. So print on demand is really good for that. But the unit cost is pretty good. So and the shipping costs are very apparent. And you can choose overnight shipping, that's going to cost more. And it's all done within a couple of days as well. That's the other thing with print on demand. Your printing's done within 3 to 5 days, and your shipping's done within, I'll say 10 days to Perth, just to cover, you know, in case. But it's economical because you haven't gone and spent a lot of money on excess stock that you may or may not be able to sell. So, you know, there's economies in doing shorter print runs, which is different to your perspective. But if you know you're going... And the other thing is, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. You can have your book with us, and you can have your book with an offset printer at the same time, because Ingram actually offers distribution to retailers, so it's different. You can do your 20,000 copies with an offset printer, but also have the... It'll come out looking a little bit different because the stock's different, but you can make the book available to retailers all over the world and get revenue from that. So you're still selling to your market and maybe sending as far as, you know, Australia if you want, but you will incur extra costs if you're sending books to Europe and America. But we can do that for you.
A lot of variations in the printing side of things. Once you've actually got your books, then you've got to get them out there. Marketing. A traditional publisher has a marketing department with really expert marketers and well-established contacts. They do it all the time. If you're self-publishing, again, that's you or whoever you choose to outsource it to. Annabelle, how did you go about marketing your own book?
I did a lot of social media, so I had my own Facebook page. I was on Twitter, and I blogged about it. I have a newsletter, so I used all of those platforms. And I hired a professional publicist who formerly worked for one of the big five publishing houses as a publicist. So she really knew her stuff, and she had lots and lots of media, more traditional media contacts that I didn't have access to, and she knew of markets that I wouldn't have considered as well. So that was really useful. But you have to do so much of it yourself, and I had relationships with lots of other bloggers. So because I've been blogging for a while, when someone has a book out, I'll ask them to write something for my blog. And then when I have a book out, oh, hi, I've got a book, can I write something for your blog? So trying to extend your reach beyond the people who already know of your work is important, and finding niches. So if your book is about, or I don't know, let's say it contains suicide as a theme, you might be able to partner with organisations that like support that sort of people through that sort of thing, and they might be interested in helping you to market your book. Or so finding groups or connections or associations where there's some link between your book and their interests can be helpful too. It's really time consuming, as Wendy said. It's the kind of hidden part of self-publishing. I think the story, oh, self-publishing is so quick and easy and cheap. It's like, but what about your time? The marketing takes an enormous amount of time. On the good part of it, though, is that self-published books have what they call a longer tail. So with a traditionally published book, about 90% of the sales of most traditionally published books happen in the first 3 months. Whereas a self-published book, because it isn't competing for shelf space necessarily, it might just be digital space, people can discover it slowly, it might build up by word of mouth. So you can keep on marketing it for a longer time and it still might grow.
Now, it was touched on briefly in the previous panel, the notion of actually getting your books, now that people have heard of them, into the bookshop, and not having a garage full of them at home. Wendy, any quick tips for people on the best way to get your book into bookshops as a self-published author?
You mean onto the bookshelves? My biggest thing is think outside the square. Bookshops aren't my biggest sales. Lots of different places, lots of different ways to sell books. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat, so just think outside the square. Don't go the normal route. Think of all possible ways. Like Annabelle was saying, there's certain groups might be interested in your book. Public speaking, author visits are fantastic ways of selling books. When I first got put Wear Stripey out, I approached some bookstores and had a competition with an original painting for a month. So, and there was like, you know, they were big bookstores and they were fantastic. They were so, because it's good for them, draws people in. They had this fantastic display of my books. They really went to a lot of trouble. And so it's good for both of us, win-win. I also had, like with newspapers, like local newspapers are the best. And so if you give them something, they'll give you something. And having that that news hook is good too. Like sometimes, like for example, my second book, rather than just write into them and say, I've got this new book out, what he was wrote in said, I've just done this 3-week solo walk on the Larapinta Trail in Alice Springs, and while I was doing it, I wrote a book. And so therefore they've got a bigger news story. And then I said, and I'll give your readers 10 free books that you can give away as well. So that's the kind of thinking outside the square stuff that I tend to do more than traditional means.
Now, we don't have very much time left, but I know there's going to be questions. So we're going to throw it open to you. Who would like to ask?
Kate, do you mind if I just quickly add to that?
Sorry.
I just wanted to quickly say, and I think this is so important, if you want booksellers to stock your books, you have to support booksellers. So I hear so often people that say, oh, I buy my books through Amazon or I buy my books through an online bookstore. And so you're not supporting the people that you later want to support you. And you are so much more likely to be able to get your books into a bookstore if you support that bookstore. So by far the biggest number of books that I've sold has been through my local bookshop, where I buy gifts for all my family and friends and I have a relationship with them. So don't bite the hand that feeds by shopping at the big evil corporations.
Right. Nurture the communities around you.
Can I just make one point about this? Because I think it's important, if you do put your books into Ingram in any of the platforms, price your books for all the markets so that you've got sales going through. It will be online bookshops, but it will also be physical bookstores because we've got 39,000 channel partners. So if you price your book in US dollars, British pound, euro, Australian dollars, Canadian dollars, you'll have access to the broadest worldwide market. You still have to market your book, and how do they discover your book? That's down to you. But you don't know where a book might take off for whatever reason, so have it out there.
All right, any questions?
Hi there, just a quick question for Deborah from Ingram. My books are all with CreateSpace, or they were KDP now, and the lead time to get the author copies from the US is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Do you guys print in Australia?
We do. So we're an American-based company, but we've got our print facility in Melbourne, which is where I'm based. We've got customer service. Even if your book's in CreateSpace or KDP, if you own your own ISBN, you can upload it to Ingram Spark, and KDP will have it, and we'll have it as well. So we feed to Amazon, but we feed to a whole lot of others as well. So you can have your title, or you can have a different ISBN with Ingram Spark. You have to own your own ISBN, but upload it to us as well, and you'll get a lot more exposure, and we'll print your author copies. We can print books for you, and we can also print books to deliver to anybody that you want to have that sent to directly from our facility. And if you want us to send it to someone overseas, you just select US or UK as your print location, and we can get it anywhere in the world, and you don't have to send it physically, incurring that extra freight cost.
Hi, my name's Ash. I just want to say, Annabelle, my mum's read your book, I've read your books, we both love them dearly. You write so beautifully, and Wendy, we love your books as well. My question is for you, Wendy. Have you had any greater success with printing in a paperback versus hardback? And as an early childhood teacher myself, I prefer hardback, and as a mum, I prefer hardback, but sometimes the cost benefits of paperback may pay off. So I'm just wondering if you've got a preference.
My preference is paperback only because of the cost. If I wanted to do a hard, I'd love to have a hardcover, but I'd really have to go offshore to do it. It's just too expensive to do in Australia. Getting books, all my books are printed in Perth, and it's very cost effective to do that here. And I like to have a relationship with my printers. I like to kind of look them in with the whites of their eyes, and they know how fussy I am. And I really like that. That's the only reason I wouldn't get hardcover. I know that it feels nicer and it lasts longer, but it's for me, it's just the cost is just, you know, it's not possible.
Hi, Kevin again. The cost of getting your books printed, how significant is it? Like, can you get books printed on hemp paper? And if so, is that really expensive?
On hemp paper, I don't know. I have no idea. I just get the standard stock paper.
We'll ask Debbie. Yeah. How much a selection of stock is available?
With print on demand, we don't have the huge range that offset printers have. So there's, you know, basically two stock types. Well, there's three. There's light white, light stock white, which is 75 GSM, not to get too technical, and cream. And then there's a thicker stock for premium colour and an in-between colour as well, standard 70. But, you know, with that, there's enough option for most book types, but not if it's, you know, really an illustrated book, that an art house coffee table book or something where your illustrations are incredibly important. You can always do it as a sample, and we provide samples if anyone wants to contact us afterwards and get samples of the books so you know what the stock looks like, hardcover, paperback, different trim sizes, we can send them to you. So, and you can also just put up a title, print one copy and go, oh, I don't really like it, and go to the offset printer.
From my experience with the offset printer for the ARC, the difference in cost between the 80 GSM and the 100 GSM, so the thicker paper, was quite substantial. So I think going to an unusual kind of stock like hemp, I would expect, would be expensive. And generally anything that's quite bespoke and is not what they commonly do is always going to increase the cost enormously. Is that a sustainability issue? Is that why you're thinking hemp? Or?
I can see a lot of books, especially coming out of the US, they've got much more lenient laws towards hemp, and they're printing on hemp.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, interesting.
Hmm. Any more questions?
There's a question. Who's that?
Can I just ask at Ingram Sparks, how much help do you give us? Like, I'm an author, but when it comes to actually setting up the book, if I sent it to you, would you be able to sort of fit the sizes and the pages and that kind of thing?
Well, that's where we recommend author service providers. It might just be a basic layout. It won't cost you too much. But we do have a cover template generator. So if you've followed the file creation guide, if you have someone that can help, if you're not a designer yourself, you don't have to use an external expert. But we don't have in-house production support. But once you've uploaded your print file, it does generate a cover template. So your spine width absolutely matches the number of pages, the width of the book, and you can see that your cover art's going to be centred correctly. We don't physically help with that side of things.
Right,
but we do have in-house client services, so we help with, you know, questions about setting up accounts, uploading files, preparing files. We just don't do it for you.
Right, but you do have people that you can recommend.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, okay, thank you.
We've probably got time for one more question if anyone really needs to know something.
All full bottle.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much to all of our panellists, Annabelle, Debbie and Wendy.
Thank you. Please join me in just thanking Kate Sutherland, our wonderful children's publisher. We're now going to have a short lunch break, during which time I encourage you to talk to all the representatives from Fremantle Press or any of our speakers on the panels, the writing centres and the editors. Maybe get a selfie with them if you want to be in the running to win our social media prizes today. So be back in about half an hour if you'd like to hear from the publishers at all three major WA publishing houses about preparing your manuscript for awards. Thanks.